The opinions expressed on End Time do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Impro Mafia, but just because I'm wholly accountable for my actions isn't going to stop me.
Impro Mafia occasionally presents End Time! Welcome to End Time, a podcast for improvisers and aspiring improvisers. I'm Dan Beeston, Impro Mafia's second in command.
And I'm Luke Allen, aka Big Sexy.
Welcome back, Luke. Welcome to episode 30-something of End Time.
Good to be back, Dan. Great to be back.
Yes, there's only been a tiny, tiny little break.
6 months.
And so it is that we will be... It hasn't been 6 months, but we will be wrapping up the last 3 months of shows that we've been doing.
Yeah.
Well, first cab off the rank was the professor.
Yes, I mean, we've been keeping very busy as a group.
Yeah.
Going back, when was the professor show?
The professor would have been back in August.
So
straight off the back of something, probably the detective.
Probably the
one.
July show. Yeah.
But no, it was a July run.
Right.
It was when Dave did Back at the Homes.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So, and then there was one after that, I think, that I've forgotten about. It's too long ago. I'm sorry, listeners.
But the professor was Impro Mafia's wink to Doctor Who.
Yes, a wink.
Yeah.
It's pretty much rubbed itself up against the leg of Doctor Who.
Not quite as subtle as that. But
yes, that was Alistair Crawford's directorial debut down at the Brisbane Arts Theatre.
And I thought I went along to watch. Loved it.
Oh, yeah, it was really fun. Basically, it worked with the resources we had because you went, we've only got really shonky props and costumes. How can we make something that seems to be really genuine? Well, what we'll do is we'll base it on something with really shonky props and costumes.
It was very authentic in that way of the 1970s Doctor Who's.
My only big concern is that the structures down there didn't wobble enough.
Yes, although there was some wobbling.
Oh, good.
There was some wobbling.
There was some wobbling.
Yeah. And then after the professor, we had...
There's a note. There's
notes.
Pick
up what
here.
I'm putting down here, Dan.
The Shakespeare show.
Shakespeare show, which I thought was another excellent show.
Yeah, yeah.
Full costume, full period piece.
Now, you were in that one?
No.
No? We were both in the audience. That's right. We sat next to each other.
We did.
We were like dates.
We shared Maltesers.
At one point, our hands touched and then we were both too excited to pull them away.
But that was great. And I think it goes to show that we didn't have a full set. When I say we, I mean they.
They. Oh, it's all company.
Yeah,
we could take responsibility for some of the success of that, but none of the failure.
There wasn't a full set, but the sparse props that they did have and the full costumes, like the complete costumes that they had, really sold it from the moment the curtains opened.
Our brains are so dumb. We are so good at filling in the dots and colouring in the background.
Exactly. So I thought that was a high point for me, was just so much detail in the costumes that everyone was wearing that your imagination just filled in everything else. And then after the Shakespeare, which was Amy's first directing
role.
Yep.
She did a lovely job of that.
That was excellent, that one. After Shakespeare, we had...
Knights of the Round Table. And after basically months and months of trials and tribulations for Dave putting together the massive undertaking that was Agatha Holmes, he got to do like a nice, silly, simple impro show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really nice, crisp format too. Like,
It was that good mix of the first half being three
bite-sized chunks of story.
Yeah, and then the second half being 30 minutes of
all of those first elements being woven together
exactly
into a lumpy tapestry.
Yeah, it was once again playing with different formats under the guise of a King Arthur style long form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a terrifying one for me.
Because you shouldered a lot of the narration and driving the story.
Yeah, and that's kind of terrifying. Because if you know how I MC, I basically sit down for 2 hours and work out what offers are going to be great jumping off points for the players that will inspire them and excite them.
Right.
And you throw me on the spot and I'm like, submarine! Spatula! Yeah. Oh God, what have I done?
On top of that, though, it was rhyming because you played a minstrel. So you had to...
Yes, it was kind of based on a game that I invented. which is basically just typewriter but singing.
Ah, okay.
Which I called minstrel. So I'd get out there and sing lots of rhyming couplets until finally something made sense, and then I'd fuck off stage.
And then we would be left to try to make sense of what you had actually just given us.
Yeah. And the funny thing was that the first couple of times we rehearsed it and tried out doing various things, I was struggling like crazy, and I just kept freaking out and throwing out things that rhymed but made no sense at all.
Which is a pet peeve of Chris Anderson's.
Yes. But in this case, I mean, the thing is, it's a blind offer that comes out there. It's something nonsensical that gets thrown into the mix, which happens in impro, and it's part of the charm of it.
Yeah.
That's why you ask the audience for offers, because they'll throw in something ridiculous, and you're the one who has to make sense of it.
Mm.
And the performers made such great sense of it. And so by the third rehearsal, I was finally getting my feet with the whole rhyming thing, and I wasn't quite so terrified of getting it wrong. And so all of my rhymes made a lot more sense narratively, and I wasn't giving any of these blind offers, so you guys didn't have quite as much fun stuff to play around with.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that.
Yeah?
Oh, good. Just because it might not have been as out of left field doesn't mean it's not as fun.
Mm. Oh, that's very kind of you.
Yeah. Cut that as well.
You son of a bitch! Ah, dear. But yes, nice at the round table. It was quite a lot of fun to be involved in.
And again, full costumes. The Arts Theatre has been a blessing, I think, for Impro Mafia.
Oh, my goodness.
Both in terms of the venue and then also the additional opportunities that the venue provides us by having full costumes next door.
Yeah.
And that's something that we've been able to add to the show and improve the quality of the show.
Yeah. We certainly spend a lot of time dealing with costumery stuff, especially Nat, although Dave did spend a lot of time dealing with it this time too, but especially Nat, deal with getting everything down on the night and moving it around and getting it all back.
Yeah.
But even then, you've got to get people sort of... You go into a play and one day you go up there and you get measured up and they give you a costume and maybe there's a couple of changes to make. And then you're in a four-week run of it.
Yeah.
But in this case, you're wearing it once.
Yeah.
And so you've still got to look right. So I sort of rushed up there and tried desperately to get a minstrel costume together, and it all fell into place. But there's so much effort that goes into something that's made up on the spot.
Yes, yeah.
So you could see why some of the other improvisation companies in the country and in the world sort of just rock up on the night and perform a show under a single spotlight.
Well, I mean, I think we can get the best of both worlds. We have done shows where it is just a simple blank canvas in terms of costumes. You know, we don't have elaborate costumes. It's black pants or jeans and a t-shirt, those kind of things.
Yeah.
And the audience gets to then fill in the dots with their own imagination.
Mm.
But at the same time, we have done pieces whereby costumes are an obvious benefit. So why not have everyone decked out in Shakespearean clothing?
Yeah.
Why not take advantage of the fact that we have chainmail and flowing dresses and a minstrel outfit for Knights of the Round Table?
It's that level of production that really separates us.
Yeah, and not every show...
brings the show out of what could be
not every
simple.
Show needs that level of costume.
Yeah.
So not every show has that level of costume, but it is available to us if we want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff. All right. Well, what else have we got going on at the moment? There's a new rookie venue. We lost the speakeasy. It was rumbled.
It was taken from us by a bank.
A bank, yes.
Hypothetically, I'm not sure legally what the
blanket allegedly over this entire situation.
Or just beep me every so often. Just bleep me out.
Randomly.
Yeah. For whatever reason, the venue...
320 on Leichhardt.
And we had a very successful run there.
Oh, God, we had so much inertia down there. Like, we were packing the place out.
Yeah.
We were making the venue owners money.
Yes. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case across the board.
Well, actually, not the venue owners. The venue owners, but also the venue runners.
Mm-hmm.
But I can only assume it was some sort of tax dodge. And that the guy down south was like allegedly. A mafioso.
Allegedly.
Or possibly a supervillain.
Allegedly.
And the banks caught up with him and went, "You owe us more money than God."
Allegedly.
And they took all of his real estate off him.
Which, you know, may or may not have been the case. Regardless, we had to find another venue for our rookie show.
I think the owner killed some people.
Allegedly. And fortunately enough, we found the Tempo Bar in the valley.
We.
I always use we.
We.
Well, it was...
Nat did some chase-ups, and the great thing about the social media thing is that you can sort of do a call-out and say, hey, does anyone know whether a venue like this exists?
Right, yeah.
And somewhere along the line, Nat got tipped off to the Tempo Bar.
Mm-hmm.
No, the...
It's the Tempo Bar,
it's the Tempo Hotel.
The Tempo Hotel.
And the bar is called the Stage Door, which is also the name of the dinner theatre underneath the 12th Night Theatre that we used to play at. So it's called the Stage Door Bar. So under the Tempo,
it's just a circle, isn't it? It's just things just come back.
It's a snake biting its own tail.
What's the name for that?
Glenn. Glenn the snake. Not smart.
I thought it was like a rebus or something. A
Taurus?
No.
That's a shape.
That's the bull. That's a Taurus is a bull.
But we're getting.
I'm fairly certain that's a constellation.
You've never heard that. But what's that circular constellation in the sky that comes up?
It's the sun.
That's
the moon.
What's that called? Glenn.
No,
but it's called Glenn.
Oh god.
At any rate, we have a new venue,
the Tempo Bar,
called Glenn. No, we're not at the Glenn. Oh, god.
That's actually confusing. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Because there is the Glenn.
I know. All right. So we're downstairs from the Tempo Bar,
mm-hmm.
at the Speakeasy,
for our new rookie venue.
Rookie venue, show. And it's probably a slightly bigger room.
Yeah. Yep.
Slightly less intimate.
Mm-hmm. A little bit different from the old venue.
We've lost the inertia, which is a real pain.
But look, that always happens.
Yeah, it always happens.
When you move venues, it's going
to
take...
Some people can't make it to that venue,
yep.
or they don't have the motivation to make the change.
Yes. It's going to take a couple of weeks or a couple months to get your full audience back.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you say, just a different location means that what was easily accessible for some now isn't.
And the people it is easily accessible to don't know it's there yet.
Exactly.
But we've got past our trial period, so we're on again until the end of November. So things are looking good for us. They seem to like us down there.
Yeah.
And we're pulling decent enough crowds.
Oh, yeah. I think it was 20 last week.
So that's not too bad for a rookie show and such.
Yeah.
And we're going to have some more vets down there. One of the problems is that no one's been available for anything.
Yeah.
Like, you guys have been doing your sketch comedy show, and then we've had exams, so...
Yeah. It hasn't been the best period, I guess, for the availability of veteran players.
Mm.
But that's looking like it's going to change, so... And, you know, the only way that, I guess, Improv Mafia can continue to grow and develop is if we continue to foster and develop our new talent that comes through. So I think that the new Speakeasy is something that we need to, as veteran players, focus our energies into, to continue to give these guys opportunities to eventually play at Albion or the Arts Theatre or festivals or whatever else that comes along.
Yeah. Well, we've got a new player down at the Albion.
Yep.
Liam Connor.
Yes.
Who's been treading the boards down there and doing a lovely job. Very good character work,
yes.
Liam does.
Yes,
so
very
he
good.
Really pulls it out when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been really fun. And we've got a couple of the old schoolers back again.
Yeah, a couple of players returning who haven't...
Kevin Lowe has returned to the game after, what, like 6 years of Six of the Best or something back in the day. And Stephen Cooper Fox, who was one of the old guard when I started.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually on the first... Pro-Am team that I ever performed on. I was like, oh my god, he's brilliant. So it's kind of nice that they sort of come back in after years away, and I'm suddenly like, I've been doing impro longer than these guys, because these guys took a break. That is weird.
Yep. So the student has now become the master.
The student has become the master, yes. Yeah. So I still can't pluck a stone out of Stefan's hand. He's too quick for me. But other than that, hoo-hoo. No, he is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, no, he's very good. I got to play with him on my first night back at Albion. So.
Mm. But have you played at the new rookie venue yet?
I did. Played there 2 weeks ago.
Yep. What do you think?
Good. It's a bit long in terms of...
It's a bit deep. The sound doesn't...
The venue itself, yeah. But, you know, low ceilings, which is good.
Yep.
Means that audience response kind of... the audience laughter stays with you rather than disappearing up into the ether.
Mm-hmm.
The stage is bigger. Which is great. There's almost a little backstage area where you just can pull the curtains so the audience don't have to see you on and off. So there's nice little touches about the venue. And I guess the main thing for me would be to continue to work at it so that we can get those audiences back to the levels that we're used to.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be able to do that.
Mm.
I remember we had a break at that O'Malley's was running really, really well for a rookie venue. Then we took a break, came back. Died in the pants.
Look, it happens every time. Every time
someone gave
change.
It to me, if I remember correctly,
that's
and
right.
then it was cancelled.
That's
three
right.
days
and
later.
You suffocated in its cot. But Every time you change a venue, that's what's going to happen. It's just the reality of the situation. So I think everyone expected it, and we're just working it, establishing ourselves at the new venue, and we'll see the improvements come with time.
Indeed we will, and hopefully I'll be able to get down there on Monday.
Yeah, look, come along if you're... It's the new batch of rookies this time.
So wait, is that now?
Yeah.
No, wait, is that... There's a brand
ongoing
new
workshop.
There's the graduation show coming up. Oh, in 2 weeks.
So these are the last graduation show rookies.
So I haven't actually performed with these guys yet.
No. So this is the last group, and we've gotten a good number of them through. You know, not everyone who goes to a workshop ends up wanting to perform. Mm. You know, there's a lot of things you can get out of an improv workshop rather than just having to be an improvised player.
Yep.
But we've had a good number of those guys from the last rookie graduation show continue. So it's been fun playing with them occasionally.
I can't wait to play with them.
To develop new talent.
I can't wait to make them fear me. Oh, that's going to be good.
Throw
them in the deep end.
It's funny watching rookies, and I'm not that far removed from being a rookie myself, really.
What are you talking about?
Well, I look at myself and I go,
you
well...
You started like 7 years ago.
I think it's only five and a half.
5.5 years ago?
It is, but you look at my 5.5 years experience compared to, say, your how long experience?
11.
And Dave and Mike have been doing it since high school. Yeah, I mean, if I was to compare my level of playing to other people's level of playing, I'm certain that I'm still making horrendous, obvious mistakes. So it's sometimes fun to look at the rookies and go, oh, I used to do that. I used to do that. And then
I don't find that fun at all.
Oh, well, no,
I want to throw my guitar down and grab him by the shirt and go, what are you doing? Yeah. That was a block.
But it is something that you know, with the feedback that Wade gives at the, or actually any of the veteran players can give at the end of the night, that they then can take that on board and make changes and improvements to their playing and continue to learn. So the learning doesn't stop in the workshop. They get, you know, the experience of being on stage, and then they get feedback after the show. So you're staring at me blankly.
I'm miles away to a time where I got notes at the end of a show,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, and crushed me. And I was like, oh, I did make a mistake. I ruined everything for everyone.
Well, I guess it depends on the note and how it's given.
Yeah.
You certainly don't want to be giving negative notes to players who've only had, you know, 30 minutes stage time.
I think the phrase was, everyone did really well, except for one really specific problem. Dan, you asshole. I think that's how it started.
I think notes are...
I was an asshole, though.
That's probably true. I think notes are a very important part of the development phase of the players. And even now, as experienced, quote-unquote, veteran players, I think it's important for us to be honest with our performances and honest with how things were going. Otherwise, we would tend to plateau.
Yeah. You see, I tend not to give very much feedback at the rookie nights because I know that I'd tend to flower it up and make it a little bit more, you make children cry. That's not going to help anyone.
But it's also a matter of you're obviously judging, not judging.
Oh, I think you'll find.
But you're
allegedly.
Allegedly. You're filtering everything that's going on through the eyes of someone who's been playing improv for 11 years.
I have little patience. It's terrible. Like, people needed so much patience to put up with me when I started. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I don't seem to be imbued with the ability to return that.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible, terrible person.
Well, that's
person.
Why you don't run the workshops, though.
I think that's probably important.
That's why we've got Wade running workshops. Positive reinforcement. You can still point out where someone's, you know, misstepped. But it doesn't have to be a negative point of view. And particularly as you know, confidences can be fragile, or you're still developing the skills you need to be consistent on stage. That's the best way to do it. And then I guess once you're more of an experienced player, you can be far more honest in terms of what you're doing out there isn't the greatest or...
Yeah. Then what you do is you turn to the backhanded compliments.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So...
Yes.
This week's topic, this week... Ha! Oh, I love the notion that I'll do another one in 7 days.
I'm looking forward to actually hearing what this week's topic is, because I know you've had a long time to actually sit down, work it out. How many months? Yeah. 6 months?
It hasn't been 6 months. It's been since August.
Okay.
So 3 months.
I don't know.
September, October. No. 3.5.
3.5. 3.5.
That's nothing.
So show nothing. Me.
I've slept for 3.5 months.
What? 3.5 months of work. What's paid off? What's this week's topic?
Hang on. I'll just ruffle through. We came up with a great topic a couple of minutes before the show started about typecasting. Because everyone has their favorite characters to do.
Mm-hmm.
Their set tropes that they build up.
Yep.
And the character that they feel comfortable. Doing mm-hmm. their go-to. They know they can do it a great job of it, and they know that the audience is going to respond well to it.
Yes, that's right.
Do you have a character like that?
Yes, certain character traits. I tend to play high status idiot in that Harold Dean mold that I've done in
Prognosis Death.
I tend to play authoritative figures. And that's perhaps purely based on, say, my physical attributes.
Oh, okay. So you're sort of tall and
I'm tall
strong looking.
And I'm bald and I you know,
muscular.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so
you look like you can punch a lion.
Your words, not mine, Dan. But yeah. Like
just a big lion.
So yeah, so I think
allegedly.
I think at some point during my development as a player, either I was cast in those certain roles,
mm-hmm.
or I chose those roles, had some success, and then continued to choose those roles.
Yep.
And then fell into that was going to be the typecast that I was set into at times, which is crazy because as an improviser, you make up whatever it is on the spot. But it's something that I think specifically in the Knights of the Round Table show that we did, I chose not to play that type of character at all.
Yeah.
Which was a riskier move.
Mm. You kind of moved to a sort of more naive idiot.
Naive idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is actually the character that I used to play all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When I sort of started out.
And how did you stumble on that? Was that poor playing and low confidence on your part expressed as an idiot on stage? That therefore, if you were making mistakes or you were blocking or that kind of stuff, because you were the idiot, it suited the character? Or
I think it came down to the fact that I always tend to have a lot of energy on stage. Mm-hmm. And so my characters would tend to skip and jump and hop and be a bit flamboyant.
Yeah.
And that sort of lends itself to a sort of a childlike air of innocence. And just having stupid characters is so much fun to play.
Yeah.
One of my favorite characters to play was always Thor, the God of Thunder, in Touched by a Hammer, who was just so friggin' dumb. Because if you can come up with a really clever way to do a really dumb thing, the audience loves that.
Yep.
Oh, dear. I would constantly go for like the naive idiot sort of guy who doesn't quite figure out what's going on. And the reason for that, actually, it is to do with bad playing. Because I didn't want to say and so I'd spend plenty of time thinking about... I'm not a very wordy performer on stage. I feel like I have trouble chatting and rambling and talking about lots of stuff,
yeah.
Which seems to be the problem that a lot of improvisers have, is they talk too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind that as a problem.
Yeah.
But I tend to do a lot of pausing on stage and have dramatic pauses.
Mm-hmm.
And
dead air.
Yeah.
Dead air.
Dead air, yeah. Yes. And that's something that... Damn it. Now that joke of just pausing too long has popped into my head, I'm like, I can't keep talking on the podcast.
Yeah.
Ah! God, now I'm thinking about talking and it's too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Stop just saying, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Add something to the conversation. I would pause and wait for the words to sort of line up in my head.
Yeah.
And so I would say the right thing, which probably isn't the best.
What is the right thing?
That's
there is
the thing,
no right
isn't it?
Thing.
Yeah. I need to throw myself more into the moment.
Yes.
And play more fast-talking characters.
Yeah.
So I try to do that a little bit these days.
Mm-hmm. And not even fast-talking characters, just responding with whatever comes to you when you open your mouth.
Yeah. One character that really surprised me was also from Prognosis Death,
mm-hmm.
was Ludwig Lestrange, because most of my shtick is great big facial movements and great big flamboyant movements.
Yes.
And suddenly I was stuck in a metal body,
mm-hmm.
of Lestrange, who doesn't react visually very much at all. And so suddenly my biggest trick was taken off me by myself.
Yes.
And it turned out to be one of the most popular things I've ever done.
Mm.
So
I mean, that was most certainly when you came up with Love, Bigly, Strange. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. First season, I struggled horribly with how slow your character was. And I'm not sure if second season it was changed or if I just had more experience playing opposite that.
But playing opposite it, we've never shared a scene.
No, but obviously being on the sidelines, you know, seeing it being played and that kind of stuff. But that was an obvious choice for you to play against type.
Yeah, again. Yeah. And it was hard and scary because you're suddenly out of your comfort zone.
Yes.
And impro is all about testing your comfort zones, but mm-hmm. sometimes that just involves getting up on stage and doing stuff that you've never done before.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's like, no, this is a crutch that I'm using.
Yeah.
And I need to sort of throw that to the wind.
Exactly. Because there is the, and I think particularly with us doing long forms at the moment, and depending on the cast of the long form, the directors might come and say, well, this is my idea, and I'd like you to be this character.
Mm.
And I think there are some times whereby the character that they've come to you and said, I'd like you to be blah, can be limiting.
Yeah.
Or potentially actually, can be limiting.
A good example of that was in Natalie's Jane Austen show.
Right.
Last year, where I was cast as the cad, who was a bit debonair and a bit sexy with the ladies and stuff and a bit caddish and lovely and wonderful. And I've just turned into Tony Martin doing Hugh Grant, haven't I? And I'm not used to playing a confident character like that on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to, my go-to is that character has personal flaws that he can't deal with. And in this case, I had to play a character who was perfect and charming and wonderful in that first half. And what it came down to is less about what I did and more about how the other characters reacted to me.
Yep.
But it was still a bit terrifying. And so if you saw that show, you probably would have noticed I was much more comfortable when everything fell apart for
once
the character
the
in
half,
the second half,
mean,
was it?
And your character got to show his ass. Not literally show his ass, but as the phrase, show his ass.
Yeah, everything sort of fell apart for that character. And on the flip side, I felt really comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
Being shot down in flames and rejected. And that's really sad, actually.
I think I possibly misspoke when I said that it can be limiting when the director says this is the role I'd envisioned.
Yeah.
Because obviously you as an improviser then discuss with the director, what if I approach it from this way? Or, you know, that's great. What if we add this? Or I was thinking of maybe doing that kind of thing as you develop the idea into the execution.
Mm.
So, but potentially, if you're always playing those same types of characters, it's a compliment in some ways where they see you as the perfect fit for this role.
Yeah.
But it does require you as a performer to continually push yourself so that you're not typecast or playing that caricature.
Mm.
Yeah. I guess it just comes down to really just continuing to try to improve as a player, to not rely on go-tos and
that's the big
stock standard and that kind of stuff. Try to continue to be in the moment, in the scene that you're in.
Well, that's a great
not
thing
in the
about
scene that you have been in at one point.
That's a great thing about all having a whole bunch of different directors over the year is that they're constantly asking you to do something new and you can't fall into those comfortable things.
Yeah.
Especially with Dave. Dave's like a taskmaster on his shows.
Mm-hmm.
Always knows exactly what he wants going in.
Yes.
So I always come in with these...
He's got a very clear vision of what this show is going to be.
So in everything that I've done that he's directed, I'll go in and say, oh, I had this idea for this. And he goes, interesting. I don't like it. Have you tried this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh. And he goes, I'd like you to try that. But damn it.
You're right, though. So, it is again, a positive thing that we've had the arts theatre to do the long forms, to do the variety of long forms we have. I mean, we covered mentioned briefly early in the episode, The Professor, Knights of the Round Table, Shakespeare, the Agatha Holmes murder mystery, the Jane Austen period piece. And so you're right. So that you're constantly being asked to adapt and change in these long forms that were put on. And different directors are bringing different things to you.
In Agatha Holmes, Dave wanted me to be a millionaire Rockefeller type.
Yep.
And I decided that I wanted to play it as a cowboy.
Yeah.
I wanted to be like an oil tycoon.
Yep.
Howdy there. Why don't you come over here and shine my shoes up for me? Hey, that sort of guff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite excited about that.
Yep.
And Dave went, I think I'd like you to be exactly like this thing.
Yeah.
Like, could I try it out anyway? He's like, you could try it out, but I'm going to ask you to do this other thing. So I ended up being a Boston. I used a Boston. Hey, kid. Boston. It sounds like it's Canadian from South Park.
Yeah.
That's my Boston.
Yeah.
Hey, pull my finger. That's right, isn't it?
Oh,
dear. After that, playing that character was what convinced Greg to cast me as the Fury in the upcoming series of shows. Fists of Fury. Which should be very exciting.
So give us the rundown of what Fists of Fury is going to be, because this is going to be a four-week run, isn't it?
Yes, 4 weeks of Sundays.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a sort of a 1940s radio serial, but played out as an on-stage comic book.
Okay, so it's not a radio play.
Nope. But it takes its genre from that style of vigilante hero style serial from back in those days.
So perhaps something like The Spirit.
Yes,
people are familiar with that.
The Spirit or The Shadow.
Or The Shadow, The Rocketeer, that style.
Yes.
Maybe a bit cheesier though.
I don't know how cheesy it's going to be. I mean, there's always a cheesiness to impro.
Yeah.
I
just think in that 1940s, 50s style, probably The Rocketeer is probably the most far removed from that, but certainly The Spirit and those kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah, that sort of action serial type thing.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun to do.
Even the old 1950s episodes of Superman, the black and white.
Yeah, I suppose so. I think one of the ideas is it's kind of like the Batman TV show, but less camp.
Okay, nice.
So there's going to be all sorts of fun stuff going on there. And I've been actually doing a physical fitness regime in preparation for it, because it's going to be one hell of a show. And it's directed by Greg, the brilliant mind behind Prognosis Death.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot to live up to. Hopefully this won't be the difficult second album.
Yep.
And it's also got a number of pretty much or the whole cast of Prognosis Death. Except for you.
Except for me. But it's quite
on
a large...
On your terms.
It's quite a large cast.
Quite though, a large cast. There's got to be a lot of people involved in it. Because there's a lot of... There's a lot of roles.
Not just cast, but also snoggers are involved as well, is
there? Yes, there's sonography stuff. So there's going to be people on any one night who are dedicated to moving stuff around the stage and dealing with that sort of stuff and doing stage tricks. So I'm lucky because I get out of that.
Yep.
So that's nice. So it's going to be a really exciting show. Mm. And so I urge you to come along and see it, listeners.
And when does that start? When does that kick off?
It's the second week of November.
Second week of November?
Yeah, that's really soon. So it's the 14th.
So the 14th, 21st, the 28th, and the...
Something of
December.
The 5th of December.
Of course, the 5th.
So, yeah, that's going to be big. And you can get season tickets. I think it's going to be $30 for all four shows.
Cheap at twice the price.
Yep, bloody good deal. Because Prog Death is $15 a pop.
Yep.
Yeah,
rubbish.
Play
rubbish.
Go see a play.
How much, Dan?
It's like $23 or something.
Terrible.
I'm going to see.
Who charges $23 for a play?
I'm going to go see Sean McAuliffe tonight. And Stephen Curry in some sort of show. That's costing like $45 a head.
Ridiculous.
We're funnier than them.
Hilarious.
They're damn straight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Original material too.
Original. Like,
let's not give
them
credit that they don't deserve.
Yeah. They didn't even write that stuff. No. Peter Cook, Dudley Moore. Peter Cook, Dudley Moore.
I'm not familiar
Moore.
With them. Oh, those guys.
Yeah. They did. They wrote it years ago. These guys are just jumping on the coattails. Same with any play.
All right, I know.
Any play.
Yep.
Someone else wrote it. What's the point of that?
I don't understand.
No.
And then to charge ridiculous amounts of money.
Ridiculous amounts.
And yet how much is a season pass?
Do you
for
know?
All four episodes.
Only $30.
No, you are joking.
My wife went and saw the Pink Floyd Experience. Do you know what the Pink Floyd Experience entails?
No.
It's not Pink Floyd.
What?
No, it's not the original members of Pink Floyd.
But the name's on the banner.
I know. But apparently you say the word experience and all you have to do is dress like them and play some of their songs. $90!
Wow. So realistically, you're going tonight to the Peter Cook Dudley Moore Experience.
Yeah.
And you're paying how much?
To 45.
Oh.
Do you know, you could come to nine... You could come to a year of Impro Mafia shows, excluding the pricey ones that we boost up and trying to just, you know, gouge you on.
Right.
For the same cost as going to the Pink Floyd experience, where it's not even Pink Floyd.
Terrible. And yet, for the low price of $30.
$30.
You get a season pass.
Season pass.
All four episodes. 4 weeks of shows.
Yes.
To Fist of Fury.
Yes. Which we guarantee will be perfect every single night.
I'm going to take all my money out of my gold and bonds.
Yes.
And I'm going to invest it in a Fist of Fury tickets.
I don't know whether that's going to work.
No. What?
I don't know that. I don't know whether they gain in value once you use them. Like, once you have the tickets,
right?
The end,
yeah.
Like, once you've watched the show,
yeah,
then the tickets have no value.
But they're so cheap.
Well, that's true. We'll probably sell some of them afterwards.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Make a tidy profit.
Yeah. Just so that people go, I missed out on that experience, and I want to cherish part of the joy.
I want a memento that's cardboard based.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I come along with my stockpile of tickets.
Do you know how valuable paper was back? Yeah, it's hard to make. Most people didn't have access to paper back in the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
It was a very valuable resource. Books were treasured.
I know.
Yeah. Paper, that cardboard ticket, you send that back in time 600 years, that would make someone's day.
Wow.
Yeah. And stuff only gets more valuable over time. So now, be worth a fortune.
Going to put it under my mattress.
There you go.
So Fist of Fury.
Fist of Fury.
Kicking off second week of November.
Yes.
Buy your tickets. Can you book online? If you can book online, people. If you can't, just buy your tickets at the door. It's up to you.
Yeah. Have we ever sold out a show? I don't think we have.
We've been close.
We came really close with some of the final nights of Prognosis Death.
Yeah, we've come very, very close. Allegedly.
Allegedly. And time. You'll be listening to Luke Allen. Luke Allen is part of the Sexy Detective sketch comedy troupe.
Check out our website, thesexydetective.com. We just finished our showcase show last week, and we're putting up all new sketches over the coming months.
Hooray! I'm Dan Beeston. You could check out my other podcast at www.smartenough.org. It's all science-y and not impro-y at all. Mm-hmm. For information about impro in Brisbane, check out impromafia.com. Thanks to David Peachy for our theme music. Hosting for Ant Time is diligently provided by Civic Net Web Design.
We do shows. We do shows.
That's...
What am I, eight? We have done
we,
shows.
We what? Sorry. 10th of December or so. Oh, I've probably got a little calendar on here. Oh, God. Stupid. How does it know it's incorrect?
Oh, it came up before. It said it was 2001.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I wonder why it's not doing the... Yeah, it said it automatically. No, it has. Can you remember what we're doing now? 14th. No,
that's
hang
December
on.
December 1969.
Whoa. Let's go to today.
Yeah.
Where's the today button? Oh, what? You know that the Japanese beer down there, it's like $9.50 for a schooner.
That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
How much is the...
I would want the attractive barmaid to urinate in it for that cost.
Why are you paying extra for that? How is that something you would pay extra for?
I frequent some very curious websites.
Of course. So we...
Oh, so much stuff I have to put after the credits, I guess.